Broadcasting live from the Chicago Board of Trade, this is ESPN Chicago, the home of the Bears, WMVP, WTBC, HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and drive, deep to left, gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Good afternoon. Happy Saturday to you. Hope you're enjoying a fabulous weekend. Had a brief little interlude yesterday afternoon here in downtown Chicago when it felt like baseball weather. Hit the 60-degree mark yesterday. It was absolutely fabulous. Of course, got a little bit windy later in the day, and it has since gone back to feeling like we are in the midst of winter. But no snow on the ground, so we will take that here on February 28th, which officially means that we are under a month away until the start of the Major League Baseball season. That is right, folks. White Sox open up on Thursday, March 26th, when they will be taking on the Milwaukee Brewers in Milwaukee. And, of course, the Major League Baseball season will officially open the evening before when the Giants and Yankees open the season on Wednesday, March 25th. So, yes, officially less than a month away from baseball. But we are in the midst of spring training baseball at this point, and the White Sox split their split squad games yesterday. Game you heard right here on ESPN 1000, the White Sox beat the Rangers 3-1 as Eric Fetty came into the game making his first start for the White Sox in spring this season. He pounded the zone early and often, exactly what you want to see from Eric Fetty, and it was a nice outing. Went two innings, did not allow a hit, only walked one, struck out a couple, and had a nice debut for the White Sox in his return. Curious to see how his season plays out, because, of course, the White Sox had quite a bit of success with Eric Fetty back in 2024 when they identified him as somebody who they thought could have some success as he made his way back over to the majors, and he certainly did. The White Sox had a great run with Eric Fetty back in 2024 when he made 21 starts for them before they ultimately did trade him at the trade deadline, but he had a 3.11 ERA and 121 and two-thirds innings pitched, and he was a really nice find for the White Sox that year. Remember, he went 7-4 in what was a disastrous season for the White Sox. For him to put together the season that he did, it was quite remarkable. He had a 1.14 whip as well. So he was very effective in his stint with the White Sox in 2024 for a little over a half a season. And they recently signed him as spring training was beginning to add depth to their rotation. So it's nice to see him come out and get right back to the old form that White Sox fans remember. Of course, he did not continue those strong numbers in his time with the Cardinals after the White Sox moved on from him. It was so bad for him that he actually spent time on three different teams last year, the Cardinals, the Braves, and the Brewers. But again, it'll be interesting to see how Eric Fetty can do in his return to the White Sox, because I do think he is most likely to begin the season in the White Sox rotation. Seems like, just my observation, what I really like right now, but what the White Sox are doing is the depth that they have added to the rotation is really interesting, because in modern baseball, you need at least six or seven starters. And let's be honest, if you have 8, 9, or 10, you're probably in a more realistic chance to get through a 162-game season in modern baseball, just the way teams approach pitching these days. But the White Sox have added quite a bit of depth where maybe nobody has quite emerged as that actual ace, although Shane Smith, who makes his debut for the White Sox today in spring, could be that ace eventually if he can add on to what he did last year in his first full season, in which he secured an all-star berth for the White Sox and closed it out in dominant fashion against the Washington Nationals in the final game of the season when he flirted with a perfect game, which he carried into the sixth inning. Ultimately, it was probably Shane Smith's best start of the season, so really excited about seeing what he can do to follow up on last year's campaign. He could be the guy who, if you're looking at it as he enters his age 26 season, is ultimately the ace of this staff, at least the way it's constructed right now. But again, the depth: Shane Smith, Davis Martin, Anthony Kay, who the White Sox added, bringing him over from the Korean baseball organization, and Eric Fetty. As I mentioned, he's in the mix. And of course, if you're a White Sox fan, you are probably very familiar with the young arms in the White Sox organization. I'm talking, of course, about Noah Schultz, Hagen Smith, and Tanner McDougal, who actually made the other start in the split squad game for the White Sox yesterday. McDougal has looked absolutely nasty, cracking triple digits on the radar gun. It makes you wonder about the possibilities for him. And, of course, Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith are the top two pitching prospects in the White Sox organization. So there's quite a bit of depth to this rotation, which makes things really exciting going forward. Of course, plenty of injuries as well that the White Sox suffered organizationally with some of their pitchers, with a lot of players who will be coming back this year. So, again, the depth that the White Sox have assembled across their potential starting rotation is quite impressive. Kai Bush, Drew Thorpe both dealt with Tommy John surgery last year, still making their way back, but those are a couple of names as well who are players who could certainly be in the mix. And I've gone all through all this and I didn't even mention Sean Newcomb, who the White Sox added. He's a lefty who I spoke with him when I was out at spring training in Arizona last week, and Sean Newcomb seems like a guy who wants to do everything he can to try and crack the starting rotation. Now, I'm not sure if the numbers are going to align in his favor, and he's certainly been somebody who's been really good out of the bullpen in his career, hasn't necessarily had many opportunities as a starting pitcher. But again, I just get back to this. You got Newcomb. I didn't even mention Mike Vassell, who's somebody who could potentially start if the White Sox allow it. I don't think that's in the cards for this season, but it's certainly a possibility. And then, hey, Grant Taylor, you probably know a thing or two about him. This year, he'll be used out of the bullpen, but there's certainly the opportunity long-term where the White Sox could see a future where Grant Taylor's a starter. Wouldn't be that dissimilar to someone like Garrett Crochet, or if you want to go way back to a guy who actually made news this week by signing another extension at the age of 37, Chris Sale. So the White Sox have had a lot of success in the past with pitchers converting them from pen to the rotation. So long way of saying that if you look at the depth the White Sox have assembled with their pitching staff in terms of where they're at now versus where they were at a couple of years ago, it's night and day. And you know it. If you've been following baseball for any period of time, you're only as good as your starting pitching. It's hard to be successful in baseball if every fifth day you're not quite sure who is going to toe the rubber for you. And the White Sox, it looks like they've finally put together quite a bit of depth to the point where I think they're going to be competitive in virtually every game, or at least you can feel good about going out every fifth day with whoever you're putting on the mound, and at least feel like they're going to give you some semblance of a chance to be in a game. And then add into the fact that now you've got some depth where you can go, okay, well, if we suffer any pitching injuries, which you're playing baseball, you're going to, that's just the nature of the game. The White Sox finally look like they can deal with that, which is not something that was necessarily where they were at a couple of years ago. So the 26-man roster, they finally added quite a bit of depth to where I think White Sox fans continue to be excited about the future here. Something that's interesting to me, and I do want to mention Scott Merkin's going to be joining us here in about 5 minutes as he is in Arizona. We'll pick his brain on what he's seen from the White Sox so far. But in yesterday's game, the game against the Rangers, the game you heard right here on ESPN 1000, again, the White Sox had a split squad yesterday. But the game against the Rangers, an interesting thing developed and something I've kind of been waiting for. Colson Montgomery, early in the game, actually in the bottom of the first inning, his first at bat, challenged a pitch with the new ABS system in place. And I don't know how much spring training baseball you have been watching out there. But what's fascinating to me is how this is going to evolve going forward, right? And I asked Will Venable about the plan when I was out there, and he has repeated the same message that they do have a plan, who they're going to allow to challenge pitches, who they're not going to allow, or at least, you know, what there may be some reins in place for certain players. They may ask them not to challenge. It's interesting because Colson Montgomery lost his initial challenge yesterday. You get two challenges, and if you, for everyone that you get correct, you can continue to challenge. So basically, you can go until you get two wrong. And so this was fascinating because Colson misses the first challenge, right? And then I was, and this is spring, so it's probably not going to play out this way in spring the way it will in the regular season. But shortly thereafter, Kyle Teal in the top of the third challenged, and he won. And then in the bottom, and I'm sorry, in the bottom of the third, excuse me, the White Sox were home yesterday in that game. Darren Baker, who actually was in the game because Andrew Benintendi had been scratched due to some side tightness, Darren Baker won his challenge in the bottom of the third after an initial called third strike. And then in the bottom of the sixth, Lamont Wade Jr., who homered in the game earlier, also confidently challenged a strike call and successfully had that overturned. I'm just fascinated to watch this play out because moving forward, it seems to me, and obviously it's not going to happen this year, probably won't even happen next year, but you've got the ABS system already in place. It only takes, you know, 3 or 4 seconds to have the call confirmed or overturned. It's only a matter of time before we have automated balls and strikes. You already have the system in place, right? It's kind of theater that you're allowing umpires behind the plate to make calls. And it's going to be interesting for this year and, you know, maybe the next couple where they have the system, because you don't want to blow two calls too early and not have the opportunity to challenge late in games. However, if you're pretty confident that the ump blew a call, you don't want to just let it go by because every bat at bat could be the key at bat in a game. So I'm fascinated to watch this play out. And ultimately, again, I just think it's a matter of time, maybe a season or two, until we get into watching the, until we actually have automated balls and strikes in baseball. All right, we'll take a quick timeout. And when we do come back, though, Scott Merkin will join me from Arizona as he takes in White Sox. Of course, he covers the Sox for MLB. Celebrate your special occasion in 2026 with a White Sox party area. Reserve your group outing today to get access to the best spaces and top matchups like opening day on April 2nd, plus other big matchups against the Cubs, Dodgers, and Yankees. For more information, visit whitesox.com/groups or call 312-674-1000. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly
on the home of the Chicago White Sox,
ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider and get special offers, single-game ticket presales, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. Also, White Sox fans, if you want more daily coverage of the White Sox, you should be signed up to Scott Merkin's White Sox newsletter, which delivers into your inbox personally if you sign up. Scott Merkin, of course, been covering the White Sox for quite some time now. He works for MLB.com, and he's taking in the White Sox today. Merk, how's it going out in Arizona today, my friend?
Good, and a special offer today. Anyone who signs up, I'll deliver the newsletter personally to them. I'll just read stuff off to them at their house or apartment or condo if they want.
There you go, the audio newsletter courtesy of Scott Merkin, if you like it.
It's going well. It's very hot and here in Goodyear, but it's baseball, so we're on the move.
Absolutely. We'll take it. I mentioned Merk yesterday. You're in Arizona, but it actually cracked 60 degrees yesterday downtown here. So it already feels like baseball weather here in Chicago, but it did drop back down to like 35 last night. So nevertheless, take in the warm weather while you can.
In Chicago, right?
Exactly.
And I mean, if it's somewhere between 35 and 60 on, I forget the home opener now, I think March 26th is the opener in Milwaukee.
Correct.
But if it's somewhere between that temperature, I think they'll be somewhat satisfied the way things go in April sometimes.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, Mark. So I only had an opportunity to go down for a day on media day for the White Sox earlier. But what struck me is the difference in confidence from all the second year players. It just seemed like everybody feels like they belong now, which is exciting, I think, for White Sox fans, because the development and of this team obviously will go based on how these young players perform. I'm curious if you've observed something similar in your time down there.
No doubt. And, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to Kyle Teal yesterday, who, by the way, has more energy than like 10 people combined. just always upbeat, always ready to go. Sometimes it kind of startles you in the morning because, you know, I'm not a big morning person, although you're forced to be out here. But, you know, how obviously talent's going to win you championships, right? I mean, you can have all the chemistry in the world, and if you're not good enough, you may improve, but you're not going to win anything. But I think they have the talent that's developing, and he really does think that the energy is different this year. And he said, if you can stay with me on this one, and I haven't written this yet, but I'm going to soon, that he thinks the team fails well. And now, of course, everyone's going to laugh and say, well, of course they do. They've lost 100-plus games in the last 3 years. But I think what he's meaning is this group doesn't panic when things go wrong. And I think you saw that with Colson last year, right, where I know Colson's tired of talking about this and tired of it probably being talked about, but he had that miserable run in Charlotte, goes to Arizona to reset, and then comes up and 21 homers in 71 games, you know, elite defense at short for those 71 games, finishes fifth in the American League Rookie of the Year, batting after those 71 games. So I think that's what Kyle was talking about. And he said, with that energy, with that confidence, with that, you know, that vibe, it's easy. It makes it easier to get through a 162 game season with the ups and downs. So that's a long way of telling you, yes, I agree with you. Now, again, confidence is great. You know, the vibe is great. Energy is great, but you got to get it done still on the field, right? I mean, we saw it last year. They improved in the second half, still didn't win nearly enough, but they definitely improved. And now they're going to, I believe Chris Getz's phrase is significant step forward, I think is what he said a few times out here. And they need to take a few of those this year.
Scott Merkin joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Jeff Meller on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. Somebody who right now is not in camp because he left to compete in the World Baseball Classic, and that is, of course, the White Sox big free agent signing, Munetaka Murakami. And I, you know, reading what you've written, watching, and also just my brief interaction with him, he's somebody who seems to be embracing his new home, or at least he did before going back to Tokyo to play for Team Japan. I'm curious what your observations of Murakami have been here in the 10 to 12 days that he was there at camp.
I mean, really nice guy, very upbeat, very funny, you know, has done more for the apparatus of bidets than the person than everyone but the person who invented bidets, I think. I can't remember the last time there's this much, you know, talk or publicity around bidets since he joined the team. But also I found it interesting, I talked to him one-on-one, when we were in Scottsdale and they played Colorado, and we were talking about how focused he is, like, on his regimen, on his sleep, on getting massages after every game, on his diet. And I asked him what his cheat day food was, and he said ramen noodles. And I'm like, man, that's like healthy for most people, right?
Yeah,
said,
right.
What about pizza or sugar? Nope. Cheat day is ramen noodles. I'm like, all right, this guy knows what he's doing. And, you know, that's something I've found over the years. You probably have seen this too, Jeff, is the guys who are really good, the Canerkos, the Jose Abreus, the Frank Thomases, of course, Chris Sale on the pitching side, Mark Burley. Things go good, things go bad, and they don't change. You know, they don't go, if Frank Thomas, who's a Hall of Famer, or Jim Thome, who's a Hall of Famer, goes 0 for 30 with 15 strikeouts, they don't suddenly revamp things. They say, stick to the program, stick what I have planned, it'll correct itself. And it did, usually, right? That's why they're in the Hall of Fame. And I think you see that in Murakami. And I will say, it means so much to him to be going back to Japan. That was actually, you know, part of the deal with the Sox, that there would be no issue with him leaving his first spring training and probably being gone, you know, based on what they've done in the past till like March 18th, March 19th, something like that.
Yep.
But I think he's going to fit in well. I can't predict, you know, we've all taken the chance of like taking the shot at like, what's the over under on home runs for him this year. And, you know, is it 30 and a half, 33 and a half, 28 and a half. But I just think he has a plan and he's going to have to adjust as, you know, the opposition adjusts, because there's not a huge book on him right now. So he may get the early advantage just because of the way he approaches things, the way he works. But I think, you know, once the league adjusts, he'll have to adjust back. And he seems like the kind of guy who can do that. So I think just I said this a bunch of times. I think he is a player with the most notoriety around him since, I mean, I would think Tim Anderson in his batting title, all-star starting, you know, stalk-off home run in Iowa days. I mean, where everything he does, and using the bidet as an example, everything he does gets notoriety because he's that, you know, that important. Iguchi won a World Series. Shingo Takatsu got a World Series ring, too. He didn't, miss that whole season in 05, but this is far and away the biggest named Japanese player they've had on the team.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Internationally, the White Sox are going to be present because of Murakami's presence on their roster.
Absolutely.
And,
absolutely.
You know, what I like, Merck, going to play in the World Baseball Classic, listen, of course, you're always, anybody out there is a little concerned when a pitcher from their team might be competing in the World Baseball Classic. But the reality is, whether, and maybe because of the WBC, they ramp it up a little more, so that concerns you for pitchers.
Sure.
But hitters, you're going to be playing baseball either way. If you're going to get hurt, you could get hurt in spring training. We see it daily, all the guys who are being scratched from the lineup, so you can't get too concerned about that. But what I like about Munetaka Murakami playing for Japan, not just, you know, his vested interest having the big home run the last time around when they won the WBC back in 2023, but I mean, he gets to play first base, which is exactly kind of the plan for the White Sox, because Japan has Kaz Okamoto for the Blue Jays playing, probably manning third base for the majority of the tournament for them. So Murakami, who is going to be shifting to first base in all likelihood for the White Sox most of the time, is still going to have a chance to play first base in some real competitive games in the World Baseball Classic. So I look at that as a plus as well.
Yeah, it sounds like he'll play both maybe for Japan. And I think first base is going to be his job with the Sox. But, you know, they've had him, you know, take a lot of, he hasn't played any games there, but he's taken a lot of early work at third base. So he'll be prepared if they need him to move over there. You know, the two players I'm interested to see in the World Baseball Classic, you know, Sir Anthony Dominguez is going.
Yep.
Curtis Meade is gone for Australia. But, you know, Teal and Sam Antonacci, who I think has really, for those who didn't know him, opened some eyes. I mean, literally the third pitch he saw in spring training, he hit 417 feet off Jameson Taillon, who, you know, was a huge presence for the Cubs, that, you know, team that fell what, one game short of making it to the LCS last year. Now again, you know, you can't, it's a more important moment for him than it is for, you know, Taillon, who probably is just working on stuff at that point. But I think he really made his presence known, and he's going to be there with Teal, the Team Italy, and Teal thinks, you know, they're a team to keep an eye on, that they may surprise a few people out there. He likes the roster, but keep an eye on Antonacci and see how he does there, because I think he is going to be helping this White Sox team this year sooner than later.
Scott Merkin joining me here on White Sox Weekly. So today, Shane Smith takes the mound for the first time in the spring against the Guardians here. And boy, talk about, I'd say, in your wildest dreams and my wildest dreams, I have to imagine even in Shane Smith's wildest dreams, he could not have envisioned his rookie season with the White Sox to go as well as it went, claiming the all-star berth and then closing it out against the Nationals the way he did, Merck. Do you think there's still more for him to unearth on the mound for the White Sox this season? And do you agree with me that I think it's only a matter of time until Will Venable eventually names him the opening day starter?
Yeah, first of all, I'll be a little honest, because, you know, it really is all about us. With that last game of the year, we're getting a little worried that we're going to have to write about a perfect game, because not only, you know, that's a lot of work on the last game of the season, because not only was there nothing close to a hit until the hit fell in.
Yep.
But I mean, he was doing it in really low pitch total. Like, it was not a stretch. Even you didn't have to say, like, well, he can go 130 because he'll have the next month off. I mean, he was looking at a Maddox the way things were going. And then he gave up the hit and was done at six. But I think one of the big things, number one, going back to your last question, yes, I think he'll be the opening starter. I think it's going to be Smith, K, Martin, barring any injury, as the first three starters. Probably Fetty and Burke after that, but I think there's still some competition on that side. But I think, yeah, I mean, it's pretty unreal. I mean, he went from the number one pick in the Rule 5, an awful first start in Cactus League play, which he joked about the other day when he pitched, and then, you know, ending up striking out six that are 5-2 scoreless innings against the Dodgers' main lineup, becoming an all-star, having, you know, got into a little bit of a month-long funk, was hurt, and then came back and, you know, was dominant down the stretch. So it was so it was an interesting run for him. And now you know, looks like opening day starter.
Fantastic. 6 shutout innings on 73 pitches and 1 hit allowed so that Merck could catch his flight out of D.C. on time to close out the season. Jeff Mellor here on White Sox Weekly, joined by Scott Merkin, who covers the Sox for MLB.com, for another couple minutes here. Merck, Luis Angel Acuna, he had to get stitches the other day. He's missed the last couple of days. What's his status for the White Sox right now?
You know, he's still day-to-day. I think, you know, he'll be back. And I think they're just giving him a little time to heal. And I think Pereira, Everson Pereira, is the one to look at more because he has not played in the Cactus League game yet. And he kind of gave us, you know, mixed messages the other day where he said, no, I feel fine, it's just sore. But then he did say it's the oblique area, which is always telling. And then he also said he was just really running at that point. So, you know, I mean, we're not even March 1st yet, although tomorrow's March 1st. But, you know, so there's plenty of time for him to heal up. But, I mean, you know, if it goes like another week, 10 days, then you're starting to get behind a little bit in terms of getting the games in there. So we'll see what happens. Then, you know, Benintendi's still out, still resting with the soreness on his right side as well.
So, and no truth to the rumor that they gave him a couple days off to take cuts from the left-handed side of the plate, right?
No, he is not working on that as far as I know right now.
All right, just making sure, because obviously a lot of people got all upset over some comments from earlier in the offseason. All right, Merck, as we wrap it up here on White Sox Weekly, anything else stand out? Oh, you know what? I did want to mention one thing because you mentioned Jim Thome, and I saw that I read your piece about, you know, catching up with Jim Thome, whose son Landon has a chance to be drafted in this upcoming draft. And of course, Jim Thome doing work scouting for the White Sox as well. So an interesting conflict of interests. But nevertheless, not that Jim Thome would ever, you know, advocate for his son over the best of the team. I think that one will
play itself out. Landon's talent speaks for itself.
Exactly.
You know, and I mean, you look at the projected draft and you see him consistently in the top 50, and you're a top 50 pick. You're pretty damn good. And also a kid who's developed so well, you know, from people I've talked to beyond his dad over the years. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see where he falls. But, yeah, I mean, the Sox have 1-1, and that's what they're focused on. They're focused on everything, but that's their, you know, their first priority right now is who goes at the top there.
So, and that's the one thing that White Sox fans, they look, and it's so early. I know everybody wants to, you know, get their Chulowski jersey already as a White Sox uniform. But the truth is that a lot can still happen, as good as Rock has looked here early on for UCLA. They actually have a big weekend of games against SEC opponents this weekend. But it's not a lock. And I guess what has been the conversations that you've heard from some people around the organization about whether Rock Chulowski, maybe someone like Justin LeBron, or even, you know, potential high schoolers who could make their way into the mix?
Yeah, I think understandably they're playing it, you know, even with having the 1-1 pick and there's no one that can take anything from them, really. They're playing it pretty close to the vest. Even when I asked Jim, who's, you know, one of the true great guys in the game of baseball, you know, he said, I like the kid, I like his offensive game, and, you know, kind of left it at that, and then talked about how much research and how much work and how much scouting is going into getting this right. So I am curious, like, I don't know what the access is to Rock Chulowski, you know, at UCLA. I'm not sure how the media relations handle there, but I wonder, like, how many Sox fans have sent him things already? You know, like Davis Martin at Sox Fest told us that after Murakami signed, he got a couple baseball cards from Japanese fans, his own baseball cards, would they sign for him? So I'm curious if, like, Sox fans have already started sending stuff out, you know, to Chulowski saying, hey, here's some good place to eat. Here's where you should live once you come up here. Can't wait to have you in the organization. But, yeah, I mean, understandably, the Sox certainly are not saying anything, you know, one way or the other. I mean, you know, right now, Chulowski is the guy who looks, I'm pronouncing it wrong, probably, but he looks like the 1-1 guy. But then again, people have told me the year that Skeens went 1-1, at this point in time, he was not the 1-1 guy.
Exactly.
So things do change. You know, there's a whole scene. I know him hitting 6 home runs in 8 games or whatever he started off with. That doesn't, you know, temper the expectations for White Sox fans. Only increases them. Only has pictures of him, you know, standing at short or standing at third or standing at second, like, you know, a month after he's been drafted. But, well, you know, there's still a lot of time until the draft comes around, so we'll see what comes of that. But, yeah, certainly a very talented kid, no question about it.
And the best is, Merck, that we can we can rehash in Chicago here another LeBron debate, because Justin LeBron is one of the top prospects as well. So we can all side for Rockchalowski over LeBron in Chicago here again.
Well, we can end the other debate. LeBron, great player, has done some great work in his time. Michael Jordan's the best basketball player of all time.
There you go.
That one right there.
There you go. He knows a thing or two about basketball as well, folks. Scott Merkin covers the White Sox for MLB.com and has a great newsletter as well. As always, Merk, thanks. And again, sign up for the newsletter, because you can find out, if you do, a little bit of a tease for the folks out there who don't, Merk. You can find out how long Jerry Reinsdorf told Roger Bossard that he wants to own the team until. So check out Merck's newsletter if you're not already a subscriber. Great Sox information for you there. So thanks, Merck. As always, appreciate it, bud.
Anytime, Jeff. Take care.
That is Scott Merkin, again, covers the White Sox for MLB.com. When we come back, we'll take a look around the majors and find out what's going on with everybody across spring training right here in your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly, ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports.
White Sox fans, get access to the best seats at the best value and lock in a 2026 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, April 2nd. Plus, enjoy flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and so much more to secure your ticket plan. Visit whitesox.com/2026. And of course, the White Sox will be opening their season at home on April 2nd against the AL pennant winning Toronto Blue Jays. Again, that's April 2nd. That's a Thursday. The Toronto Blue Jays will help the White Sox open the home portion of their season. Again, though, we are under a month away from opening day for the White Sox. They will open the season in Milwaukee to take on the Brewers. Merkin mentioned that. I mentioned that at the outset. That's going to be a 1:10 first pitch on Thursday, March 26th, a game you can hear right here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000, along with every game of the White Sox season, the regular season, that is, of course. Next actual spring training game comes your way tomorrow when the White Sox will take on the Cubs at Sloan Park. So road game broadcast during spring training here tomorrow afternoon, White Sox and Cubs. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly, and we'll get you caught up on what's going on around the majors right now. Busy, busy week, as it pretty much is this time of year in baseball. Lots of injuries we're monitoring. Still some signings coming down as well, including, how about the Atlanta Braves securing Chris Sale's services for another, well, a couple of years if the Braves so choose. They signed Chris Sale to an extension this week. And, of course, White Sox fans very, very familiar with Chris Sale. What I'm going to go ahead and say is going to be, I think, ultimately, when all is said and done, a Hall of Fame career. And I don't really think it's that debatable at this point. I think the Cy Young that Chris Sale won back in 2024 pretty much secured his status as a Hall of Famer. Now, he only has 145 wins, but the truth is that wins is not something that you can really look at in baseball, look at starting pitchers. It's not going to compare to the past the way pitchers are used these days. Nevertheless, Chris Sale's win percentage is 622. He's 145-88 in his career. He's logged over 2,000 innings. And oh, by the way, in those 2,000 hit innings, he's got 2,579 strikeouts. So that's a pretty dominating K per nine ratio. He actually has the highest strikeout ratio per nine innings by a starter in history. So, yeah, I do think when all is said and done, Chris Sale will ultimately be a Hall of Famer, and he has signed an extension through 2027 with the Braves. including an option for 2028, a team option. So Chris Sale likely to finish his career with the Braves. So thought that was a pretty cool story, seeing that come across this week. Max Scherzer resigns with the Toronto Blue Jays, the previous mentioned Toronto Blue Jays, who will help the White Sox open their home portion of the schedule. Mad Max, he also will be a Hall of Famer. Speaking of Hall of Fame pitchers, there's no doubt about that. And this, I guess I would say, is likely to be Scherzer's last season. But I think we thought last year might have been his last year. So as long as you're still somewhat, I guess, productive and you've got the will and want to play, you might as well keep rolling along. And Max Scherzer signed a one-year deal. Very incentive-laden, by the way. So for every, I think it's every 30 innings pitched after 60, he gets incremental bonuses for like $1 million. So it could turn into a pretty significant deal if Max Scherzer logs a lot of innings. But I'm not sure that's necessarily in the plans for the Blue Jays this year. But he has signed with the Blue Jays. And again, this goes to back to what I was talking about. With the White Sox, you really can't have enough pitching depth in baseball these days. Doesn't matter. Even if you've got five or six guys slated for your rotation, you certainly will grab a veteran like Max Scherzer if the price is right. Hello, Connor Griffin. Did you see what the top prospect in baseball did earlier this week? He homered a couple times against the Boston Red Sox in his spring debut. And now it looks like the Pirates and Connor Griffin's team have opened discussions about a potential contract extension, which would open the path for Connor Griffin to make the Pirates opening day roster if they could agree on an extension. Of course, I say that because there's always the question with a teenager. He's 19. He'll turn 20 in late April, I believe. But do you want to potentially, if you're a team with a top prospect, secure or potentially secure player services for an extra year? Of course, service time, manipulation. Nobody actually likes to talk about it, but the truth is that it does happen. But if the Pirates could get an extension done with Connor Griffin, then it would seem to clear the path for him to be the opening day starter for the Pirates, who actually have, it looks like, put together a competitive baseball team for the first time in a while. Some good news and some bad news for the Minnesota Twins. This one you're probably aware of, but Pablo Lopez underwent Tommy John surgery earlier in the week, and to repair his torn UCLA, he'll obviously be gone for the year. But this is, I think, good news because the Twins, Royce Lewis, their third baseman, he underwent an MRI yesterday and it came back clean. He was scratched from his game on Thursday with some tightness in his side. So that is a good news, bad news situation for Royce Lewis. Gerrit Cole set to face live hitters on Friday for the Yankees as he makes his way back from Tommy John surgery last year. Speaking of extensions with good young players, how about the AL Rookie of the Year, Nick Kurtz? It sounds like the Athletics are doing all that they can to try and get him to sign a long-term deal. The question is, will Nick Kurtz be receptive? Of course, the, what should we call them? The previously Oakland, currently Sacramento, soon to be Las Vegas Athletics. How about that? Maybe that's how we'll start calling them. Jake Santos, who's producing.
Just the A's?
Part of me wants to do it because of the fact that they want everybody to call them the Athletics while they're in Sacramento. It's almost like they want to pretend like they're not playing in Sacramento, except for the fact that it's an absolute bandbox that they're playing in that minor league ballpark, Sutter Park. And so, hey, you chose to move before you actually had your home stadium ready to go in Vegas, so you're going to have to wear it, in my opinion. So again, the previously Oakland, currently Sacramento, soon to be Las Vegas Athletics are trying to sign a long-term extension with their Rookie of the Year, Nick Kurtz. We shall see if they get the job done. Joe Musgrove also coming back from Tommy John surgery. He looked sharp in a simulated game as he is quickly approaching his spring training debut. Rafi Devers was scratched with hamstring tightness for the Red Sox. Of course, he now plays for the Giants. So we'll monitor that situation. Samuel Basayo, the catcher for the Orioles, is dealing with some abdominal discomfort. And that's just really what we're doing. It's that time of year, right? When all the little injuries, they don't press it. They don't want to force it, teams, because they want to make sure that guys are healthy for the regular season. And you can certainly understand that. Muni Murakami was given a day off when he was originally slated to make his last start for the White Sox before he left for Team Japan to compete in the World Baseball Classic. The White Sox gave him a day off just because of general soreness, because he had been going so hard for the 10 days or so that he had been in camp with the White Sox. So again, you certainly can understand that. Finally, one last one here on the Blue Jays. Trey Yesavich, who absolutely mesmerized folks in the World Series and postseason with some dominant performances, as the Blue Jays did come up one game short of winning the World Series against the Dodgers. Trey Yesavich, it sounds like the Blue Jays are going to be careful with his innings this season. They're going to have him on an innings limit, although I'm not so sure how many he'll be limited to, because he did pitch almost 140, 139 and two-thirds to be exact last year. So I would suspect that even if they're going to try and keep him under wraps, it'll probably be close to 150 anyway. When we come back, we'll wrap up this edition of White Sox Weekly right here on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports is the home of the Chicago White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
As his default grip. And Chalowski gets a hold of it. Deep to center field, Brunson to the wall. It is gone off the batter's eye.
Senior was the same way.
That ball is crushed. Right center field, Chalowski has homered again.
There you go. A couple home runs from Rock Chalowski last weekend as the shortstop for the top-ranked UCLA Bruins has homered, or at least he did homer, six times in UCLA's first seven games. Did not homer last night for the Bruins. And why does that matter? Because, well, this weekend they are playing, they being the UCLA Bruins, are playing down at Globe Life in Texas. They're playing, or at least this weekend they were scheduled to play three SEC teams. Last night, the top-ranked Bruins beat Tennessee, I believe it was 12-5, and they also have Texas A&M today, and then tomorrow, I believe it's Mississippi State, who they will be taking on. So, and the reason that matters is because I think the biggest question surrounding Rock Chalowski is, because he plays for UCLA, despite the fact that they're top-ranked, they're in the Big Ten. They're not in the SEC. And so traditionally, when you're talking about players from power college programs, you're usually talking about players for SEC teams or a few, you know, California teams. Obviously UCLA is a California team, but you know, the competition he's facing, you know, in a conference is maybe not up to par to what some SEC players might be facing. Nevertheless, though, big showcase weekend for Rock Chalowski. So that's something that we're going to be monitoring all year long here on White Sox Weekly, because he is right now the prohibitive favorite to be the number one overall pick. But as I talked about with Scott Merkin earlier, it's still early in the calendar in the college baseball season, in the prep season. So there's still lots of turns that could be made. So nevertheless, Rock Chalowski crushing the ball to start the season. I'm Jeff Meller. That is going to do it for this week's edition of White Sox Weekly. Stay up to date on all things White Sox by following the team's official social media accounts. Don't miss a minute of the action on and off the field. Follow at White Sox on social today. Thanks so much to Jake Santos for producing today. Up next here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000, it is the odds couple coming your way, Carmen DeFalco and Mike North. I'll talk to you next week on White Sox Weekly. White Sox and Cubs tomorrow afternoon, spring training, your next broadcast of White Sox baseball on ESPN 1000.